This is the Canucks Central postgame show.
On the far boards, Michael Carcone turns and fires from long range. Missed the goal. Bjugstad trying to wrap around it through the crease. And the rebound is tucked in for the right circle by Kevin Stenlund. He snaps it past Kevin Lankinen. And Utah ties the game at one. Armada back to Schmaltz. Left circle. Long shot. Tipped off a stick. Cooley with the rebound. Right circle scores. Kevin Lankinen diving to his left. Couldn't get to it. As Logan Cooley, who didn't have a point in his last six games, gives Utah its first lead of the night. The hockey club goes up 2-1.
With instant reaction from the players and coaches.
Hironic gets it left circle. Trying to drop pass to the line for Hughes. Broken up by Schmaltz. Gets it to center for Clayton Keller, who shoots and scores into the empty net to seal it for the visitors. Keller, with his 24th of the season, makes it 3-1 Utah with under 30 seconds remaining.
Have your say on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Canucks 3-1 defeat on home ice against the Utah Hockey Club, and this is the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. It's Satyar Shah with Bick Nazar. We are going to bring in Randeep Janda into the conversation in just a moment. You can grab a phone line 604-280-0650 or toll free 1-888-275-0650. And you can hit us up on the Dunbar Lumber text inbox 650-650. Last night, the Canucks offense was flowing. Had 6 goals on 15 shots, some highlight reel goals, and the offense dried up tonight against the Utah Hockey Club. And, you know, they got some shots on goal, more shots on goal tonight than last night, but not as many scoring chances. And when they needed it the most, Randeep, especially in that third period, they just couldn't generate anything enough. And they had power play opportunities. They had a four-minute double minor, and they didn't take advantage of it.
I think that's the most disappointing part because, of course, you understand it's a back-to-back, guys, but that four-minute power play, you've scored a power play goal tonight, and really what it came down to was – when you win the faceoff on that first unit, it seems like they can set up there. They have some confidence. But anytime they have entries or they attempt entries, that first power play unit is struggling mightily, even with Quinn Hughes, to gain the zone. And it doesn't look like a cohesive unit when they're just lose that first faceoff. It feels like that confidence has gone right off the bat. And it's not only about the offensive blue line, but it's even in their own zone when they're trying to regroup. I think part of it was fatigue there in the third period. You could see guys thinking things, but they were not able to execute it. But that, to me, was really the moment in the game where they could have been able to power back, and it's a tough game back-to-back, but that's your opportunity. That's your moment to get back into it. And they were really lacking confidence and chemistry on that power play.
We chatted on the first intermission about the power play goal. And it's just Patterson takes the drop, fires it up really quick from his own end to DeBrus, and they get the easy entry. And we just don't see those at all, easy entries in general right now. And even though the power play in the last 19 games here is clicking at about 26%, although a little bit less after that four-minute one, it's had its successes as far as goals, but the main issue is, can you get set up? And not only do they not get set up, like, it's a struggle to get set up. And we've seen here, we've talked, you know, Sat and I, we've talked about, like, this cross X that they have on the entries. And they've tried different things, and it just has not worked. And they've got a dynamo in Quinn Hughes. I know he's not 100%, but it shouldn't be that big of an issue when you've got Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson. It should not be that much of a struggle.
Well, what happens later on that power play about halfway through? Lekkerimäki takes the puck through the middle of the ice. Sure, there's a little bit of a broken play there because Stenlund loses a stick, but we see the contrast of power play one struggling to get those entries, whether it's diagonal plays or just basically skating it through, and power play two gets out there, and they're able to set up within about 20 seconds, right? Yeah. So I think it's a little disappointing, obviously, because you have the bigger weapons on power play one. So, you know, that's something that you look at that sequence. That, to me, was the game where it looked like you had some confidence. Brock Besser's able to get that, you know, penalty call, as fluky as it was, but you're not able to generate.
No, and, you know, if the stakes weren't as high as they are, and if the Canucks had been in a better, more advantageous position in the standings, we could sit here and talk about, hey, this is two back-to-backs in six nights. This is the fourth game in six evenings. You would imagine that in the second half of the game, the third period, you are going to look out of sorts. You're not going to have the juice. But none of that is going to register because the Canucks need these points so badly. Now, it was good on them beating Chicago and, of course, the big game against the Calgary Flames. And tonight was an opportunity to separate yourself from the Utah Hockey Club. And it's just a reminder that this playoff race – it's not going to end anytime soon. Like, it's likely going down to the wire, and it's a reminder that these teams, a lot has to happen for one team to separate from another, and the Canucks tonight just couldn't find that gear in the second half of the game.
Well, the team might not be doing it, or maybe they are, but scoreboard watching is a thing, guys. So Utah, you're not able to, you know, have that lead go up to 6 points. It goes back the other way. St. Louis is absolutely annihilating Anaheim tonight, so they're still in the mix. You've got Vancouver now. It was an interesting thing where not only could you have, you know, expanded the gap to 6 points with Utah with a win, you could have got that much closer to Minnesota for the wild card one if you win this game. So, you know, now you're in flux a little bit more. Obviously, the odds are going the other way. And on Tuesday night, you've got one of the best teams, if not the best team in the NHL, rolling into town. And it's going to be kind of a roller coaster over the next week here, because I think Calgary's got the toughest schedule, if not mistaken. Vancouver's got the second toughest. And then Utah and St. Louis have some easier schedules. None of these teams are juggernauts. They're able to drop games to whoever. That's why they're in this position of wild card too. But, of course, that schedule matters, because if you've got Winnipeg on your schedule twice, it's going to be that much tougher to play them. So, guys, it's going to be, I think, pretty – it's going to be entertaining, of course, but I think there's going to be a lot of Canucks fans that are going to be sweating a little bit, because it's going to be that type of race.
Yeah, and tonight was opportunity night, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't must-win, far more must-win
for advantage,
right?
You.
Yeah, it was far more must-win for Utah tonight than it was Vancouver. But as you mentioned, like, if you take advantage of this, man, you can make this task so much easier for yourself with the strength of schedule that's going to be coming up, getting ready to play a team like Winnipeg who can methodically chew through you so easily. So tonight would have been a nice one to just feather in camp and just clear out some of the clutter.
Yeah.
So it's just Calgary, St. Louis, and yourself on this chase right now. But you let Utah back in, and now, yeah, it's going to be a four-horse race here. And like, because the opportunities presented themselves, it'd be one thing, like, you push, don't get it. Okay, that sucks. But, like, there's a four-minute power play. And
yeah.
There were moments in these games. I'm going to use moments, like Rick Tocchet likes to use moments. Like, there were moments in this game to help your cause, and they just didn't. They had a 1-0 lead here, and they played the way we've seen them play with leads here. And that to me was a tipping point. Is like everything up until the goal, they were fine. Utah had some puck possession, but a lot of it was to the outside. We talked to Dakota Joshua in the first intermission, and he sounded very comfortable with the way they played in that first period, despite the low shot attempts. And we've seen that from this team recently. But that goal scores, and hey, positive, you get the 1-0 lead. But we've seen that same show all over again where it's, let's sit back a little bit, and Utah really started to grow into that game after the goal.
Well, one of the things I think Rick Tocchet will also mention is the shot attempts, right? They had 34 attempts blocked or missed in this game. So, you know, when you get 19, the finishing number is 19, and you have 34 attempts that are blocked or missed, 5 from Connor Garland, I think 3 from Elias Pettersson that were missed. Brock Besser had 1, didn't have enough shots on goal to begin with. That's going to be something that you're saying, okay, you're not getting that much puck on the net, but you're getting some of those looks, and there were a couple of flat-out misses.
Yeah.
Like, flat-out don't even hit the net. For a team that can't generate third-period offense, I believe they're minus 19 now in the third period, which they're not able to score. You need those pucks to hit the goaltender. You need them to create rebounds, and that's one area I think Vancouver just hasn't been able to generate, guys, is, of course, you want to pick the corner with the best, but sometimes just getting a puck on net and creating a chance, they've really lacked on that, where get the puck there, and hopefully guys get there, but they haven't just been able to do that.
No, not enough, right? And, you know, what happens there on the game-winning goal, the 2-1 goal, it's Marcus Pettersson kind of takes himself out of the play a little bit. Myers tries to cover over, and we were watching the play over and over again, and Kiefer Sherwood loses his guy a little bit. And it's like, you don't make that one mistake, though. Maybe we were playing in overtime at the very least, right? Like, I'm with you. You want to see them create a lot more, but the game was still there in the third for them to get a result, and you know, one guy switches off or is fatigued or whatever it is, loses his guy, the next thing you know is it's in the back of your net.
Well, one of the key things, guys, going into any of a second of a back-to-back is you got to keep those shift lengths short, right? And on that play, if I'm not mistaken, I think almost all the players were around 50 seconds to a minute, and they just started to eat pressure there. So what do you start doing when you get tired? You have those lapses. You start chasing maybe when you shouldn't. You get out of position, and it's unfortunate because the puck also goes off Teddy Bluger's skate and pops over to Logan Cooley. But the reason that you're eating pressure is that you've been hemmed in a little bit in your own zone. So, you know, I think a part of that is fatigue, where you, the first thing that goes is you're trying to do something. You're trying to think the game at the same level, but your body's just saying no. On that sequence, it feels like they all kind of got caught that way, and it was kind of that domino effect.
Yeah, the lowest guy there is 56 seconds on that shift.
Yeah.
The highest, I think, is a minute 03 for Kiefer Sherwood. And so, yeah, it plays to what you were just saying there, Randeep. And, you know, for me, it's like, yeah, Marcus Pedersen loses a battle in the corner in a big way. Clayton Keller did that a couple of times on a couple of different bodies throughout this evening. And he just put it back into Marcus Pedersen. He crumpled, and now Myers is saying, right, well, I got to go with this guy, and who's going to cover for me? Dursey's very cleverly snuck into the slot, and that draws the eyes of Kiefer Sherwood for a little while, and so he doesn't pick up Logan Cooley coming from the back. But again, like, everything did get settled. Like, it's 2v2 in front of the net. You can live with that because guys are meant to battle and pick guys up. It's, yeah, one guy creeps in on the backside. There's that rebound that goes off of Bluger's skate, and it sits perfectly for Logan Cooley, who still has a lot of work to do. Turns his body just enough to get the puck going in the right direction. But, yeah, just fine moments. But when you're not creating enough, these fine moments can suddenly explode into the game-changing play.
And that's why the power play is that much more important, right, where – one of the areas we all understand, especially without Philip Hedl being in the lineup now too, I know he hasn't been able to generate as many points as maybe we thought he would, but his ability to take the puck out of the zone, have controlled entries, relieves a little bit of pressure. You eat a little bit more pressure, you're gonna be in a position, guys, where keeping those shift lengths is that much more important, because you don't have that guy that can move the puck out of the zone. You have Quinn Hughes, you have Elias Pettersson in moments, but you take that guy out of the lineup, it's going to have a trickle-down effect. And I think we saw that a little bit tonight, where in a second of a back-to-back, you need those legs, guys that can skate the puck out of trouble. And Vancouver, unfortunately, couldn't do that there.
No, and they're, you know, Hughes gets the goal, Pettersson gets the assist. I mean, not enough from both guys offensively. They had the one moment, right? You know, a guy who hasn't had a goal-scoring moment in 12 games is Brock Besser, and he's taking a lot of heat on the text and inbox. Aaron from Hamilton wonders about him getting a healthy scratch, perhaps. I don't see that. Sabres Rob mentions how his tenure is ending on such a low note right now. He just looks so off of it. And the most noticeable thing he's done so far, and I don't mean this to be facetious, was him taking that high stick and getting the four-minute penalty, right? You haven't seen him connect play very well. He looks off the pace in terms of his speed. He looks like a guy who doesn't have a lot of confidence. And I have sympathy for the fact that we're not sure who his best line mate is after JT got traded. We all know what Alvin said after the deadline about how nobody wanted to make good offers for him, and, you know, whether that, you know, bothered him or not. So there's a lot going on. The environment hasn't been great for Besser either. At the same time, here's a big opportunity for you to make money. Deadline's come and gone. You got to find something. There's got to be something in the tank you can pull out, and he doesn't have a lot of runway left. Sitting at 18 goals in the campaign, and, you know, I'm not sitting here and talking about his contract yet, and we have people asking about that, but if he wants to earn money, he has to finish the season a lot stronger than how he's playing right now.
Yeah, guys, the two things that are standing out, the pace, which is something that he's never been known for, but it just feels a little bit more pronounced at this time, at the timing of the game, and I think a part of that is also, Sat, to your point, and he's talked about it as well, who's that centerman? Who's that person that he can, you know, find that chemistry with? With JT, that timing was there. They got playing well together. I don't think that chemistry obviously is not there, whether he's played with Hedl, whether he's played with Suter, whether he's played with Pedersen. The other thing is the lack of confidence, or the lack of getting the shot off A when he's deferring a little bit. I think we saw it on an odd man rush today where he was not taking the shot, but hitting the net. Like, he is trying to go top corner on everything, and when you start squeezing the stick to that point, you're going to miss the net, and he's doing a lot of that, right? Two blocked attempts, two missed nets, one shot on goal. For a guy that gets shots off and is a 40-goal scorer in this league, he's just not shooting enough, and he's not shooting enough to threaten the goaltender. And that's where I look at right now. I think it's the pace for sure, but also just overall, Vic, as well, to bring you in on this. Like, this is a guy that's not shooting with confidence, or he's deferring a lot right now, which is, for a goal scorer, you can't be doing that.
I can understand the frustrations of how everything is played out, right? But then, and look, I understand we're talking about a team right now that has to accomplish things, and there's a certain level of selflessness of doing it for the team. But if you're upset, well, at least play for yourself then. At least try to go get the goals to...
Man, rack up the power play goals. You got 5 minutes of power play time, right?
Like, what's going on here? Because the shot, he hasn't clipped four shots on goal since, I think, early February. It's Brock Besser we're talking about here.
Goal scorer, yeah.
A guy who's meant to be easily floating past 30, going towards 40. He did 40 goals last year. I'll bring it up here, but I'm pretty sure he doesn't have four since, I think it was February 4th. Yeah, February 4th. It's been 2, 1, 2, 1, 0, 2, 0, 2, 2, 1, 2, 0, 1. That's not, forget like if the goals go in, that's just not the player that we traditionally see. And so I'm just very curious like what he expects to happen in the summer, whether it's to stay here or big payday elsewhere. If you're not even trying to play for yourself or your own moments, it looks like such a struggle right now.
And, you know, also, I mentioned the power play. He's not a threat in the power play right now either. With 5-on-5, if you're talking about not finding that chemistry with another centerman or another finding that trio, guys, on the power play, he's still not he's not finding the moments. There are, you know, that power play on the four-minute, the deferring, Hugh Suter got out there a little bit earlier because they're still repairing Brock's lip. He gets out there, and it's just kind of passing it around, right? And they're deferring, and 5-on-5, if you're not able to generate, you're trying to find that chemistry is one thing, but I thought there were a couple of moments where you could get the shot off 5-on-4 and still nothing. And that's one area that you wonder and say, all right, the confidence seems really, really low.
Yeah, it certainly does. Right now, we have a lot of people kind of asking us, too, about the Canucks and why they look so slow tonight. Should we be surprised the team speed took a big hit when one of their fastest forwards wasn't in the lineup at Filip Hedl? Something we talked about on the pregame show that, hey, Hedl's offense hasn't been there. And I know people said it's like, well, they're not going to miss him. And it's like, okay, sure, he hasn't scored a lot, but he brings speed. He brings forechecking ability. He brings something that this team doesn't have, his zone entries, for instance, his exits out of the zone. He brought something real tangible down the middle. The Canucks really missed that. And I've seen a lot of people talk about how slow the Canucks were. I do think not having Hedl, at least from that regard, was really noticeable tonight.
I think the biggest struggle tonight through their own zone and through the neutral zone was not necessarily finding the first pass. It was how was that player receiving it and skating it out of the zone or creating the next play. Because I actually think most of the defenders tonight didn't have an issue finding the first play. And there was a lot of glassing out. But nevertheless, like there were opportunities to move the puck. But, yeah, like just taking that first pass and getting out of the zone felt like such a struggle. And there was so much chipping it in. Even if this team lacks speed right now, you think, all right, can you chip it in and get something going? Like Utah had an easy night on retrievals to just skate back, and I thought someone like Kesselring did a great job throughout the course of the night carrying the puck, but even, hey, how do I slow up a forecheck or let my D partner go track it? Like they were smooth on that, and throughout the course of the evening, they were able to get their own speed just because the retrieval just looked so easy for them, and so Hedl plays such a role in that because even on like rebounds, he can sometimes be a bit daring and say, oh, I'll just handle it and I'll generate my speed myself. But that puck mobility and puck carrying ability is there for him, and it's a trait of his. So it was sorely missed tonight, yeah.
Well, the numbers back it up too, guys. He does that, you know, his control zone entry seven times a game, right? Like the end-to-end rush is 2 times on average. And that's something that is, I think, when it's in the lineup, you say, oh, he's great at it. But when you take it out, you're searching for somebody else to do it. And this is a team that does practice having those forwards, you know, hit the ice with speed through the neutral zone, even if it's off the glass and out. This is something you practice, and this is something that they have practiced, but it's a lot easier in practice than when you're playing in an NHL opposition, and they just weren't able to execute that tonight, and the forwards were not able to kind of slice through the neutral zone with the puck. So, you know, and you've got a group in Utah that can go back the other way real quickly. So if you mess that up or if you're not able to gain the zone at the blue line, they'll go down, and a couple of times we saw that with Utah. So missing Filip Hedl for sure. Hopefully it's not too long, but yeah, his, you know, the lack of speed really shows, especially on the puck when he's not there. Who are the other players that can do that? You know, we've seen Elias Pettersson try a couple of times. I think there was one moment where he drew the penalty against Logan Cooley. That was one moment, but you need more from other players, because if Filip Hedl is going to miss a few games, yeah, it was a little too stagnant from this team.
Yeah, it certainly was, and we're hoping to see a lot more, and not a lot of rest. So from this point on, the Canucks play every other night until the end of the month. They have a game coming up
on
Tuesday.
Man. Yeah,
they got one on Thursday when the road trip begins, and it's a grind, and it continues on Tuesday. And Randy, we won't be chatting with you on Tuesday because you're going to be hosting the Canucks for Kids Telethon. Looking forward to watching you take care of that like you always do. No Elliot Friedman this year, but you guys are going to hold it down on Tuesday.
That's right. We'll have a fun show, and it's the most, in my opinion, the most important show because we're raising funds for charities that support, you know, children across this province. So the link is active right now. Donate right now. And it's going to an amazing cause, the Canucks for Kids Fun Telethon. So I'll see you guys.
We'll see you on Tuesday.
We'll run into each other.
You're going to be busy.
Yeah, Thursday otherwise.
We'll look for the guy carrying the big checks.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's what he does usually anyway.
He's walking around
with big checks.
And he's like Happy Gilmore. He always asks for the big checks. Yeah. He's like, I don't want the real ones.
It's a $5 big check.
The rest of us, direct deposit.
That's why he's got the pickup right now. He's going to put them all in the bed.
Well, you know what? Tuesday, hopefully they're big checks. So start donating. The link is active right now.
Yeah, no doubt. Great stuff, Randy. That's Randy Janda calling the game tonight alongside Brendan Batchelor and the Canucks for Kids Telethon. Make sure to check that out. And if you can, I know times are tough, but it goes a long way and a lot of people depend on it. And the community always comes together for an amazing cause. All right, keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free, 1-888-275-0650. Now, Bick, before we get to the phone boards, a lot of reaction in the Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. Give a bit of a sampling on the Brock Besser discussion, and I see other Besser texts, and we'll get to some of those as the show goes on here. But obviously a lack of offense is a big issue so far with the Canucks in this game here, and people are talking about that. And Ames in North Van says, why I can't get excited. Wish we could create more shots and chaos, rebounds. So frustrating to watch and dump and chase. That's Ames texting in. And a lot of people having issue with the Canucks not generating enough tonight.
Yeah, plenty. And it's a lot of different people in the crosshairs for fans here tonight. Jackson from Victoria. Besser and Lekkomäki passing up numerous slot shot to pass it across the ice. Embarrassing effort on the 4-minute power play. Sloppy and disconnected tonight. Constantly playing on the perimeter will generate almost nothing. Seasons on the line and they were scared to drive to the net and get on the inside. Bad look tonight from the guys. Pettersson, this one's from Ryan in Richmond. Pettersson again on the 4-minute minor. Starting the power play on the left side all the way at the blue line. What is he expecting to do there? Ryan from Richmond, something in an area where obviously JT Miller had a lot of success in. But Pettersson starts lower and is almost positioned with his shoulders facing the blue line rather than JT would almost skate out of the zone to take this pass from Quinn Hughes and generate on the fly moving downhill. So it looks a bit more stagnant there with Pettersson trying to create from that left side than what we've traditionally seen for years here in Vancouver. And also Philip Peronik. Getting some text messages from fans, including from Wes. Roenick should have seen some serious time on the bench after that third period performance. Open your eyes. Very frustrating to watch the giveaway after giveaway when it's crunch time. It's a huge wasted effort. That's from Wes coming in, 650-650.
Yeah, we can talk about Hronik a bit later. I mean, I'm okay with giving him a pass. He's been so good the last little while, but the third was really tough, and that turnover on the empty net goal is just, you know, you and I turned to him like, no, what are you? And then the puck turned over right there, so I hear you. Raymond says, 4 games in 6 nights, back-to-backs, team isn't very good. Would have taken a miracle to win this game. That's what Raymond says. And this one says, Sat, you and I both know this was a scheduled loss. I hate the term schedule loss, but I get what you're saying. I just can't stand the term.
Four games in 6 nights?
It's a lot.
Scheduled
loss. I get it. Keep your thoughts coming in. We'll get to more of them as the show goes on, but let's go to the phone boards, and let's start things off in New Jersey where our friend Chris is on the line. Chris, thanks for calling in, buddy. What do you have for us tonight?
Hey, Seth. Hey, Beck. How you guys doing? Just calling in. I just wanted to say two things here. I have a Connor Garland story, and I have just a tiny wish list. Small wish list for their offseason. So, Connor Garland, I remember last year, the start of last year, we're always looking for drama in the Canucks world, right? So, not looking for it, but it just always seems to find all of us, right? And I remember he had his, you know, there's like a rumor about a trade request, and it turned out to be, you know, a nothing burger, right? And so, we were at a game in Florida, me, my brother, and my buddy, we were down there, and, I actually in warm up. I was just so mad because you know, years of losing and years of just frustration. Like this guy's a third liner. You know what I mean, like, was he? You know, want to trade request, right? I flipped him off, and he looked at me, and he like kind of like giggled and like, you know, smiled. It was funny. But you know what? Let me tell you something about Connor Garland. He is well. After that, we ran into Elias Pettersson's dad, the first Pettersson, because there was only one. We don't have to clarify at that point in time. There was only one on the team at that point, but he was plastered in the concourse. But he was cool as hell. No, but. If we had 12 Connor Garlands in the forward group every night, team would be well into the playoffs right now because he battles so hard. he does such a great job night in, night out. And I know he's not, a top level guy, like some of these other superstars in the league, but he plays so hard. So, much props to him. And if I ever saw him, I would give him a handshake and, firm handshake and tell him my bad on that. But, Connor Garland's great. However, this team, it's weird, guys, that 2 years ago we were looking at this team like they could score at will. They were great. And the biggest problem was defense. And now it's a complete shift. Like, they defend so well. They keep the puck out so well. And most games they're in, it's a 2-1 game as of late, right? Or a 3-1 game or whatever, because of an empty net like tonight. They just can't score. They don't have any top six. They're just depleted up front. My biggest wish list, looking at the UFAs, because at this point, you really can't give up assets again. You have to find a nice balance to where you can add without subtracting. And I think this free agent class is, they could have 14 mil, approximately 15 mil in cap space. My wish list, I don't know if you guys agree with me, I would love to get Sam Bennett. I would love to get Brad Marchand. Silly, I know. And then I would love to get re-signed P.S. Suter. Those three.
Those three,
I know,
guys.
Besser. I love Besser. Love to get those other three, because I think that would change the tone up front and kind of give some juice back into that offense that we're missing with JT Miller. Oh, I miss JT Miller. But,
right.
Yeah, I don't know. That's where I'm at right now. But.
All right, Chris. Thanks for the phone call. Good run there. So the three guys he'd go after. I mean, honestly, I think Bennett will probably end up staying in Florida. We'll see. They started talking contract with him again. And would you be surprised if Marchand just goes back to Boston?
No.
That's kind of based on everything they were saying. Like, I kind of get what I think ends up happening with him. But Suter, they might get Suter back, so he might get one out of the three.
Sam Bennett would be number one on my list.
I know,
but
he's
there. Like, Florida's got cap space; they got the leverage of competing, taxes, warm weather. All these things are just in their favor, and they have the cap space to do it. It just seems tough to see him getting to market. But, yeah, he would be number one on my list, too, if you were to make it to market.
No, I hear you. Let's take one quick call before we hit the break, and let's go to Bella Bella, where our friend Don is on the line. Don, thanks for calling in. What do you have for us tonight?
Oh, hey there. I didn't think I'd ever say this, but what I'm seeing is this team misses Zadorov. They have no answer to any type of rough stuff on what Utah was doing all night. And teams like Utah wouldn't be doing stuff like this after the whistle if they had to face Zadorov. And if they happen to make the playoffs, they'd be out fast with this lack of scoring. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for the phone call. That's Don and Bella Bella missing Zadorov. And toughness is still something people talk about quite a bit, lacking it so far for this team, especially in these types of games where they wanted a bit more toughness. Or I would say last night's game against Chicago, the whole Jason Dickinson hit on Filip Hedl. Now, we'll talk about Hedl a bit more, his absence and what happened in this game and what did not happen in this game. Obviously, offense being lacking. Keep your thoughts coming into our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. We'll take more of your phone calls. Plus, we'll hear from the Canucks head coach. That's next on the Canucks Central Postgame Show, presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More coming up next on the Home of Your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Miss any part of Halford and Brough in the morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast, and don't miss an episode.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Schmaltz with a backhand attempt to the net after the centering pass from Kerfoot. Couldn't get it on target, and Nick Schmaltz has it again left corner. Lays a reverse hit on Marcus Patterson. Goes to the line for Mata. Back to Schmaltz, left circle, long shot, tipped off a stick. Cooley with the rebound, right circle, scores! Kevin Lankinen diving to his left, couldn't get to it, as Logan Cooley, who didn't have a point in his last six games, gives Utah its first lead of the night. The hockey club goes up 2-1, 5:08 into the third.
And it's one of those things the Canucks had to avoid in this period of getting hemmed in your own zone, being stuck on the ice for a long time, and all of the skaters nearing a minute on the ice as the Canucks ate pressure, and Utah just sending pucks towards the net. Schmaltz gets the shot off. This is tipped, and it goes off the skate of Teddy Bluger right to Logan Cooley, and Kevin Lankinen tries his best to make the save, but Cooley deposits the puck into the back of the net to make this 2-1.
Utah goes on to win 3-1 over the Canucks at Rogers Arena, and this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Satyar Shah with Bick Nizar, and keep your thoughts coming in to our Dunbar Lumber text inbox, 650-650. You can also grab a phone line, 604-280-0650, or toll-free 1-888-275-0650. We'll get to the thoughts of the Canucks head coach as soon as that becomes available to us. But before we do that, a lot of reaction on the text inbox, as always. And as far as, you know, the offense being the big thing, that remains the big thing in the text inbox. Bryce from Abbey says, the Canucks initiated the grit in the game. Classic ice-cold takes from this fan base. We need offense. That's the biggest thing. And
yeah,
I don't disagree.
Don Bellabella call has got some people fired up here in the inbox. 650, 650.
Yeah. What else? What do
you
have?
Well, there is some support. Some people saying, hey, Don's got it 100% right on it. And then there is some other thoughts that this team is in dire need of some offense in general. Dino saying, I actually thought the team toughness has been fine these past few games. Everyone seems to have their Don Cherry glasses on. I just don't see what they are seeing from Dino. More thoughts about just in general the overall team toughness and just this desire to see some form of offense here, and chance creation just is not there right now.
Yeah, I mean, Amra says it's clear what happened tonight. Rick Tocchet told them that last night was not Rick Tocchet hockey. I'm not quite sure that's what happened, but, you know, that's how Amra feels about it. Not a fan of Rick Tocchet's coaching in Vancouver.
The highlight reel goals were too much?
Yeah. You got to get back to the dump and chase. Alan in North Van says, guys, fact only, they don't have the horses. We might want to consider ourselves lucky that Vancouver is even competing for a playoff spot, given the players they have. Absolutely no great game breakers up front other than Quinn, who can't do it alone. So there you go. You only scoring one or two goals is not going to get it done. That's Landon North Van, and not unfair at all. All right, let's take a phone call here before we get to the Canucks head coach, and let's go to Chilliwack, where we have Mike on the line. Mike, thanks for calling in. What are your thoughts here after a 3-1 loss against Utah?
Well, even though we played Chicago last night, which isn't really that better of a team than the team we played tonight, I've seen that coming through the neutral zone and trying to move the puck up the ice, instead of passing and spreading the Utah team out, they were passing in close and trying to make one too many moves. That's the first thing I've seen. And this chip and chase, I mean, most teams, it's like they know us. They know our plans. They always seem to come out, take the puck and move it out just as quick as it goes in. The other thing is, when we're in the zone, and when we had that power play for 4 minutes, yeah, it was too bad they didn't get more shots than that. But I don't understand why they got Pettersson switching to the right side. Why don't they leave him on the left side? He's got that good shot, and when he shoots from the left side, he scores a lot of goals. Like last year, he scored a lot of goals. And tonight, I noticed on the power play, I thought, oh, last night they're doing great. They're shooting the puck. There's guys in front of the net, and that's how they score the goals. Tonight, it was the complete opposite. They kept passing the puck. They always look for that pretty pass. Well, how about just putting the puck in the net? And my last point is, we need some toughness. Because if that was me on the ice, when that guy got a penalty the other night in Calgary and cross-checked Hughes, maybe I would have got beat up by the guy, but at least I would have stood up for my captain. He's a little smaller, and I'm a little bigger than he is. I would have stood up for him. I would have made sure that I sent a message to that team that, hey, you're not going to do that to my captain. Anyways, I'll hang up and listen to your reply.
Hey, thanks, Mike. I guess we need Mike in a dark alley to have our backs. He jump in there and defend his teammates.
Oh, well, Mike's my producer, man. That's my captain right there.
Hey, Eddie, are you willing to lay your body on the line like
on, Eddie,
Mike
what's
is?
Going on?
Come on.
I'll do it before you guys will. I know that for sure.
Yeah, that's not wrong. That's not wrong. I would say this. I mean, the difference between Chicago and Utah is 22 points in the standing. So there is quite a difference. And right now, Utah's only two back of Vancouver and the same amount of games played. So it's pretty tight. But
I do want to say, though, on the power play, like, he's not wrong. And there were just moments, too, for Besser and for Lekkomäki in particular, because Besser kind of came out late because the getting work done after the high stick.
Yeah.
They both had moments. Just even if it's a bad angle, can you put it off a pad? Can you just get a shot directed at Vedmelka and just create some sort of chaos? Because there were bodies kind of flooding into the slot, so we're rebound bounced to the right spot. And Lekkomäki in particular, like, he had one – just below the circle, above the line,
yeah.
just to do something with it. And he just kind of retreated, sent it back, and this whole sequence of mm-hmm. passing started all over again. Brock had a moment like that, too, a little bit higher up, tougher to get the shooting lane through. But nevertheless, can you just create something? And that is something Rick Tocchet is asking for desperately. Just put it to the space, and do you create something thereafter
yeah.
rather than just, hey, let's look for that pretty pass that Mike was talking about. And then the best chance they end up getting – well, it was a Myers shot was probably the best chance he ended up getting with some puck moving. But then Pettersson gets a puck.
Yeah.
Top of the circles, right in the middle of the ice. But Sherwood had vacated in front of the net. And so
there's nobody there, yeah.
It's just a clean shot in Vejmelka, and goalies are too good nowadays.
Yeah.
And even if it's Elias Pettersson ripping a shot, you're not moving the goalie, you're not taking the eyes of the goalie. Like, they're just going to snare that in the glove and just wait for the next faceoff.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, and it was a good observation. It's true. I mean, none of that connectivity was kind of there tonight, and whatever the reasons were for it, they just didn't have it. Seema says, we have no juice, a.k.a. the firepower. Yes, Sherwood, Joshua, and Garland, they've been doing a good job, but we're weak overall. Last night was a fluke with the 6 goals. Goes on to say, the Canucks 4-minute power play was the equivalent of me and my husband deciding to dust off the tennis rackets and hit the court. So not getting much done. So I hear that. All right, keep your thoughts
tough
coming in.
For the husband there.
Just catching strays, man.
Just catching strays.
At least she didn't drop his name, so that's all right. keep your thoughts coming in. We'll get to more of your texts as the show goes on. We'll take some more phone calls. But let's get to the thoughts of the Canucks head coach. Here is Rick Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown.
Rick, let's start with the power play. Third period, you get the 4-minute penalty. You get 6 minutes of power play time and just not much in the way of quality looks. How did you see it?
Yeah, we just looked at it. Me and Yogi, the coaches, were a little frustrated. There was a lot of plays there to be made, and we just didn't make them. It was a little bit slow. We needed somebody to take charge of it. There was opportunities that, you know, they had 3 guys on one of our guys. If it goes low, we should attack. I mean, there's just plays there. We just, I don't know if we're tired or our thinking process, but I agree. We didn't get much.
You mentioned fatigue. I know you're one that doesn't like to use schedule as an excuse, but it felt like after you guys got up 1-0, they maybe took the game over a little bit. Any thoughts on why?
Well, I mean, it could be fatigue. You know, maybe I don't know if they took the game, or I didn't think they had a lot of chances. It's a 1-1 game going to the third. We got, 6 minutes of power play. We're talking about moments. So I don't think they took over the game at all. I think they had some, you know, they got good players. I mean, NHL hockey teams you play against, they're going to get their moments, but 1-1 game, 22-hour turnaround. We have 6-minute power play. We don't get it done. That's the game, bottom line.
On that power play, Rick, their penalty killers were obviously very aggressive at the top
yeah.
of the umbrella.
Yeah.
Do you have to find a way? Is there space
you
there?
You go down low, and we have a 3-on-2 or 3-on-1. It's plain as day. It's been told, you know, we're a little frustrated, the coach staff, because when you go hard up high, the puck has to go low. It's you got to make a play. It's there. So I think we're a little bummed out about that.
And I know you spoke about this earlier today.
Yeah.
Phil Hedel hadn't been scoring lately for you, but he certainly was skating and transporting the puck. How much does it hurt not having him now?
Yeah, weakens your center position a little bit. You know, he's a speedy guy, you know. So you lose some speed in the middle. It does hurt short term, 100%.
The one goal that you do get, you have layers of traffic, DeBrusk and Besser and the Utah players there. In the power plays in the third period, when you were generating shots, there didn't seem to be any traffic there. Is that a matter of needing to make the right read, wait, patience?
Yeah, it's probably read. I mean, yeah, it's read. You know, you got to buy 2 guys. You got to have somebody in front of the goalie's eyes and a second stick. So, maybe fatigue, pressure. Some guys handle pressure differently. Like reads, are different. But it's a 1-1 hockey game. Like I said, they didn't get that much, and we had a 6 minutes of power play. So didn't get it done. We lost the game. That's the story.
And with Hedel coming out, Lekkerimäki goes back in. He's a guy who in Abbotsford in particular has thrived on the power play. Was there any thought to mixing up those power play units when things weren't clicking and perhaps giving Lekkerimäki more of an opportunity with some of your top players?
Well, we scored our power play. I'm not going to, I'm going to take Besser off. I mean, I got to get him going. You know, we have to go with the guys we're going. But I think he got some at the end, Lekkerimäki. That's not the answer, but but he will be eventually, yeah.
Coach, we know what this game meant in the standings. What are you saying to your guys about the standings right now?
Well, you got to let it go. It's no different. You lose in a playoff game. You know, we got to flush this down. Are we disappointed? Yeah. But you have to flush this down. We got a big Winnipeg team coming in, and we got a day off tomorrow. We got to get some rest and get some energy. It's game to game from here on in. You can't take this. I'm sure we're a little disappointed right now, but we got to come in the next day when we come. I guess it'll be the morning skit. We got to bring energy because you can't be down. Play a roller coaster. You got to let it go. Tough to do, but you got to let it go.
And that said, do you want your guys looking at the standings? Do you want them thinking about where they are, where other teams are? Or do you want them to just be locked in on themselves in the here and the now in this team?
Yeah, I think that, yeah. I mean, you know, obviously guys scoreboard watch. But I think really you got to worry, like we got to figure a way what happened. You know, like when the pressure hit us, we had 6 minutes, what happened? You know, why did we make those reads? Why can't we make those reads? That's what we got to learn the next 48 hours. And that's where guys have to do their homework and understand if this happens again, we got to rise to the occasion. That's really what it comes down to. So it's a learning lesson.
Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet at the podium, brought to you by Tiletown. Proudly Canadian-owned and operated since 1971. Visit any of their three locations and talk to their in-house design consultants or visit them online at mytiletown.ca. And Bic, he didn't say we gave them the game plan and they didn't listen, but he essentially said we gave them the game plan and they didn't listen and we're kind of bummed out about it.
Well, the thing is, like that, we were chatting about the goal earlier, the one goal that they do get. You watch that. They have two guys in front of the net on Sergachev.
Yeah.
And so Quinn Hughes just takes a quick shot and it's 2v1 down low. And Sergachev, amidst dealing with all this, has the puck go off his glove and in.
Well, now, you broke it down to on that Pettersson shot where there are two guys and they vacate the front of the net. Nobody's there.
And so he's chatting about it. Again, I'll save myself for a rewatch there and really get to see all the things that he saw because I'm not entirely convinced there was as many numbers as he may have been proclaiming there. But nevertheless, I'll credit to the coach of how he saw it. But nevertheless, like that first goal is exactly what they're talking about of – they get the quick entry, quick shot, recover with Pettersson, up top to Quinn Hughes. And Quinn Hughes wastes no time on this. He gets it, and he sees it even before Pettersson passes in the puck, that there's two guys in front of the net. And so the shot goes right away, and DeBrusk and Besser in front. And, you know, Sergachev can only deal with so much, and that puck goes off him. And, again, it's good fortune having it go off the glove and in, but they got the kind of look that they're looking for because someone's going to have a free stick in there. If there's a rebound, someone's going to be free in front of the net. And, you know, with the way Jake DeBrusk has worked in front of this net so far this year, he's had a lot of success digging pucks out of pads and depositing that one in. Brock Besser,
he's done a really good job with screens generally. Like, he's been good in front of the net.
Yeah, that's kind of where he's had his success even last year. So that's an advantageous spot you want to be in. Even though it doesn't traditionally look like the, you know, cross crease backdoor tap in, you're using your numbers to your advantage in that spot. But that didn't materialize in that 4 minute power play. It was static and it was stagnant. And so I imagine that's a source of frustration because he saw what he wanted to see earlier and they get the goal from it and it doesn't happen later on in the game. Now that could be a credit to Utah making their adjustments, all that, but yeah, he was frustrated.
Well, the third especially, because you saw it, right? Like, there were opportunities, and they weren't getting to those spots. And you could actually look at times through the first and the second where they were doing those things, to your point on the first goal, and it just kind of went away from their game. And he said the difference was 6 minutes of power play time, but you can't get it done. That's ultimately the difference in the game. And he talked about trying to get Besser going and, you know, about him staying on the power play. He's got to find a way to get him going. It's been 12 games now. He hasn't scored a goal. He wondered if fatigue played a part, but at the same time, you know, they have to create more and do more. What did you think of his thought on Hedl, saying obviously not having Hedl weakens them. They lose speed down the middle. We were talking about that earlier. But he kind of mentions, and he said this today, that they're going to wait 48 hours to find out if he can go on the road trip or not. And he says hurts short term. I don't know if it's wishful thinking, but there's maybe a suggestion here from the team that they're hoping that this Hedl concussion isn't going to be a long term thing. And I think the best thing you can do is hope that it isn't, really.
Yeah, that's the thing. It's just because they need any level of juice. We'll use that word that that was mentioned earlier. Was that Sima's text?
Yes.
Yes. It's noticeable. It's really noticeable, and I think it was Mike that was calling in earlier, too, of, like, so much dump and chase and looked easy. Yeah, we referenced that, too. It's Like, I've got no problem with dump and chase hockey, right? And I don't want to see it 100% of the time. Like, there's, you need a mixture of carried in across the zone, and you need a mixture of just to make it unpredictable at times. But the thing I don't want to see is nobody hitting the line with any speed when that puck has gone in. If the player meant to be retrieving is still at the top of the circle in the neutral zone, that's a distance to cover.
Yeah.
Or if the player is stationary at the blue line when that puck is chipped in, now I got to engineer the speed to go after this puck. You're just not retrieving those ones. And that's what we saw a lot of tonight. Either it was too much distance for the player to chase after, or there was no speed to go after it. And so the retrievals became so easy tonight to generate some of the offense. And you know, one of the things Rick Tocchet talks about, and something that he did so well last night, is can you stop that puck? Whether it's back pressure, whatever it is, can you stop that puck to allow the next guys to come in, and now you pull the puck off the boards and create something? It was easy for Utah tonight compared to what we saw last night to Chicago. I know there's a gap in talent, but how you control that still matters, and they let Utah be very mobile with the puck.
I think there was one of the entries before they scored the goal on the power play. It was a straight pass that they gained the zone entry from. I think it was a Pettersson pass, just straight up. Yeah. It was like a two-line pass, hit him in, they went in. And I turned to Landon, and we were watching the game, and I'm like, why don't just do that more often? And it's there, and it's available to him. And there was a couple of turnovers, one of the Hronek ones. It's like, you're there. You either can walk it in or just make the pass, and then you still are forcing the draw pass. And they got caught up, and the puck didn't even go in. It's like
a lot of
those moments,
handling tonight.
Yeah, it's like you have them. Just take what's in front of you. You know, you don't have to execute what you have in your mind. Take what's in front of you, and not often enough does that happen here. And on Hedl, hopefully, you know, he is back, and they need him. Was there anything else that stood out to you? I talked a lot about have to let it go, disappointed, but have to flush this one because they have the game coming up against Winnipeg.
Yeah, it's not going to get any easier, right? Like, you got to – big boy hockey coming in with the Winnipeg Jets on Tuesday, and then get it, like, ready for this road trip. It's St. Louis is going to be a massive one on Thursday. Then you got an early game in New York on Saturday. So it's like fast and furious here.
Yeah. Well, Quinn says that the talk it subtly suggests Lekkerimäki is going to replace Besser in the future on the power play as in next year. Kind of alluded to him, you know, playing a bigger role down this stretch. And I know Vikingstad mentioned he only played 7 minutes tonight. Should he be in Abbey instead? He played 8:47. And I think...
Yeah, I don't love that.
But. No, I don't like that. But this is what I will say, though. I'm okay with him being here and going through. Like, there are going to be some growing pains for young players. There are going to be things that they're going to have to experience and learn through. Now, if it gets to a point where he's playing under 10 minutes a game, a few games in a row, and he looks off it, okay, sure, send him back down to Abbey and let him go and play. But I'm okay with him working through things as well. He's going to have to find a way to overcome, and he's not going to be ready, I don't think, truly to make an impact for another year or two, really, but I'm okay with him being here and experiencing this, and at some point he'll probably find his way back in Abbey, but I'm fine with him being here. But to that whole notion of replacing Besser in the future on the power play.
I mean, that's what you would expect.
Yeah, that's kind of the internal plan you were hoping for at the very least.
Yeah, you would hope.
Yeah.
I mean, Brock Besser doesn't have a contract right now. Doesn't seem like they're close on any contract negotiations. He's certainly not like playing to a level where you're like, oh, we got to keep this guy. So what's the impetus to start contract negotiations all over again? Lekkerimäki is the first pick of this regime. At some point, he's going to play regular minutes, and he's a natural goal scorer.
Yeah.
It makes all the sense in the world. At some point, he's going to get on the power play, whether it's direct replacement for Brock Besser, whatever it is. Like, he should be on the power play next year.
Yeah.
Like you would hope.
Yeah. Make the team and be on the power play. That's what you're hoping to see at the very least. All right. Keep your thoughts coming into our text inbox, 650-650. We'll take more of your thoughts on the other side. And we are going to hear from Kiefer Sherwood next. He was asked about the hit on Filip Hedl. You don't want to miss what he had to say about Jason Dickinson and what he wants to see done to Jason Dickinson. Keep your thoughts coming in. We'll get to more of those. We'll also hear from iMac a bit later, more from Canuck players, more analysis on the Canuck Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. More next on the Home of Your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
Hey, it's Jamie Dodd.
And Thomas Drantz.
Get your daily dose of Canucks talk with us weekdays from 12 to 2 on Sportsnet 650.
Or catch up on demand through your favorite podcast app. This is the Canucks Central Postgame Show. Join the discussion on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
Now over Bukestad, poke check by Hronek. Carcone gets it back to the line for Ian Cole. Out of the far boards, Michael Carcone turns and fires from long range. Missed the goal. Bukestad tried to wrap around it through the crease, and the rebound is tucked in from the right circle by Kevin Stenlund. He snaps it past Kevin Lankinen, and Utah ties the game at one with 7:54 remaining in the second period.
And Vancouver starts chasing a little bit in their own zone. Some puck watching as Nick Bukestad gets the other number 17 on the Canucks. On basically Filip Hronek on his back and just kind of chasing him, gets body position on him and makes a pass to Kevin Stenlund through the legs of Elias Pettersson. And Stenlund, the depth centerman for this team, usually known for his faceoffs, ends up getting the 1-1 goal here as Utah is back in this game. And that's unfortunate for Vancouver because I thought they had some momentum after that Connor Garland shift where the crowd here was chanting his name, but Utah takes advantage of that zone time.
And the Utah Hockey Club go on to win 3-1 over the Canucks at Rogers Arena. And this is the Canucks Central Postgame Show on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. Keep your thoughts coming in through our Dunbar Lumber text inbox 650-650. People have some suggestions for the power play. We'll get to that as the show goes on. Dino texts in and says, man, people are brutal. Second game in 22 hours. So much for the growing positivity of last night. Sheesh. That is Dino texting in. But yeah, there are people frustrated, of course. Hey, wins brings happiness. Losses bring frustration. And the people voice their emotions after the games. And last night was good. Tonight is bad. So that's what you're kind of getting here.
Yeah, losses can bring frustration, but especially when you're on the edge of the playoff line. The
stakes are high.
Yeah. So if they were comfortably in, and you could say, missed out on 2 points tonight, but sitting there with 80 points, we're all right. You'd see that growing positivity, but you got 73 and teams are nipping at your heels here with St. Louis and Calgary and Utah. Such is life. In a season, your expectations are paired with your frustrations.
Yeah, and I think it's fair. And, you know, this is going to be a bit of an up and down journey, some peaks and valleys until the end of the regular season. And we'll see if the Canucks find a way to get into the postseason here as well. We'll get to more of your texts and your phone calls coming up in a little bit here on the post game show. But we mentioned Kiefer Sherwood and what he had to say about Jason Dickinson. And let's get to it. Here is Kiefer Sherwood after the game meeting with the media in the locker room.
Yeah, it's a tough one. It's a back-to-back. I don't think our, details or execution was there tonight. It's not an excuse. We got to be better. And we've been saying, the urgency has to be there each and every game because it's such a dogfight right now for the playoffs.
How frustrating is it to have the 6 minutes of power play time in the third period and not be able to create something with that?
Yeah, I mean that's on us. We got to execute and we got to get the momentum or create more chances. Like that's a prime opportunity for us to take advantage of the game and 2-1, in 4 minutes there. So we got to learn from it and really apply it and move on because, there's a lot of tests ahead of us.
After it was 1-0, it seemed like they maybe took over the game a little bit. How much of that was maybe fatigue given the schedule you guys have been dealing with?
Maybe a little bit. I mean, we can't use any excuses. You know, it's they have a lot of speed and a lot of young forwards that can make plays. And just seemed like tonight we were chasing it. We couldn't really set up our forecheck and, have those possession shifts where we can kind of roll the line. So every game is a little different, but, we just got to move on and really the urgency has got to be there from puck drop against Winnipeg now.
Offensively, you guys have had some challenges, but it seemed like a bit of a breakthrough yesterday. I know, Chicago necessarily isn't, the best team, but how disappointing is it that you couldn't build off yesterday given the number of guys got points and were feeling good?
Yeah, it's more so like when we play the right way and, predictable hockey, I think that's easier for guys to make reads and creates more opportunities and chances. And when we do that, I think everything else opens up. So we didn't probably deserve tonight, to be honest. So we got to come ready and come, refresh and get ready to go.
Sorry, you didn't have Hedl tonight. They hit last night. You lead the league in hits. You probably have a certain way that you hit guys and certain ways you don't hit guys. What did you make of that hit?
I mean, it's back-to-back games. The guys are taking liberties on our guys. And he's going to have to answer the bell next year because I know we don't play him again, but that was a dirty hit, unnecessary 6-2, and then he doesn't have the whatever to step on the ice afterwards. We had Forby asked him, and It is what it is. You know, we'll get them next year.
And there's been no discipline, too.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know what they're seeing. We try to focus on what we can control, and we got to move forward here. You know, it's hopefully he can. We need him, so hopefully he can recover quickly.
On that last power play, when you are creating shots, it didn't seem like you had a lot of traffic at the net. Is that just a matter of timing? Is that reading off of each other?
A little bit of both. You know, I think with how aggressive they are, we wanted to create 2-on-1s and 3-on-2s down low, and I think that's kind of where maybe a little bit of the miscommunication is. So we got to, you know, get back to the drawing board and be better.
Kiefer Sherwood after the game tonight, and referring back to last night against Chicago, that Jason Dickinson is going to have to answer for that next year. We'll get him next year. I wonder if you'll hear from the league on that one. I mean, listen, I know he doesn't mean they're going to go and assault him. It's going to be like another Todd Bertuzzi Moore thing. But like when you threaten somebody, we'll get him, usually that draws a response from the league and something. Not that it's going to be suspension, but he'll get a call saying, like, please don't go assault the guy.
Yeah, I imagine the league will have that game on heightened interest.
Oh, man.
Pretty early.
I think we're all very sensitive to that, because that's like what Brad May said.
Yeah.
Right? After Steve Moore hit Marcus Naslin. Mm-hmm. He said a lot more, too.
Correct, yes.
He wasn't quite as diplomatic as Sherwood was, but one of them was, you know, we're
plus
there's
was
a bounty
other
on his head.
Fires yeah. stoked from the head coach and everything
yeah,
like
and
that.
There was bounty on his head. It wasn't quite that, but yeah, they will get him next year was something.
On top of the NHL having their comments about this at some point, I would also urge the NHL to schedule that game early next season.
Yeah, get it out of the way early.
Get that one out of the way early.
Because if someone gets suspended, let them come
they
back.
Have, in the past couple of years, they have played Chicago early, even if it's on the road.
Yeah. Or,
they have played them in the early part of the season. So
yeah,
something to look forward to in 25-26.
Yeah, and you know, he kind of calls it a you-know-what play, and they didn't want to get into it specifically.
But, again, for some of the clarification from yesterday, right? Because we saw that there was an exchange at the bench
through
it all.
Forbert challenged.
So there's your clarification. Derek Forbert asked him to come out, and he didn't. And rather, he didn't have the whatever to step onto the
clearance.
Ice.
The coach said, you're not going out.
Add in whatever word you want to for the whatever.
Yeah.
But, yeah. And by the way, just Derek Forbert, I thought he had a excellent game tonight.
He's been good. He's so good defensively. He's clean. He makes the right play. He's been spectacular on the PK. And for a guy who's playing a third pair role now, only played 14-41, and most of that was 5-on-5 and a minute on the PK. But every time he's out there, he keeps it simple. And I think at his age now, too, having that be on your third pair, like, it just takes a lot of pressure off.
It was highlighted by that 3-on-1 block it's Doan sliding back to Dursey. And Derek Forbert, like, times it perfectly, forces the pass to the right guy, slides perfectly, gets his body in the way. But he had a shift earlier in that period, just a great zone denial on one play for an entry. And then there was a centering pass on a rush play, and he breaks that one up too. And I just thought he had an awesome game, especially, you know, paired with some other guys that were struggling today. And we've chatted about Hronek, Marcus Pedersen, I think had some rough moments. But Derek Forbert was ever the steady one today in a lost effort all of a sudden, because the game it goes the way it does. But I wanted to single him out today because I thought he was really, really sharp.
Yeah, and you know the great thing about him too is, like, he doesn't do a lot. And I mean that in the greatest compliment. I mean that, like, he doesn't move off his spot. He gets to the right spot. He occupies space. He doesn't get off his space unless he has to, and he keeps everything in front of him. And it's so simple, and it looks so effortless oftentimes, but what does it end up doing? It ends up forcing guys to either shoot it at him where he blocks it, get close to him where he can use his stick, or he can find a way to angle you off somewhere else. And I just love watching him defensively.
He wins from positioning.
Yeah, he really does.
Rather than we see Hughes and Hronek. Yeah. There was actually a nice play by Hronek where he kind of undercut, I think it was Logan Cooley, and then just took the puck away. Use the space and his movement really well. We see Quinn Hughes do that so often that those guys win from the ground up, right? They're constantly going to win with their mobility. It's not traditional run a guy through the wall, squash a cycle, take the puck away. It's just you're skating with someone with speed, and you're able to just lift the stick, carry on, and use your body in the right spot. But he's always just winning with his mind and his stick well in advance of the play. And when he needs to be mobile, he can get there and finish play on the boards when it's in that kind of half-court offense. But, yeah, I thought he had a really strong game.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's been terrific all year, but I had the same sentiments on Derek Forbort. It's just, you know, too bad that defensively, that, you know, somebody called in earlier and mentioned, you know, the Canucks were so good offensively a few years ago but couldn't defend. Now they can defend really well and they just can't score. They've been living on extremes, it seems like, right? We'll get to more of your thoughts on the text inbox, but let's take a phone call here and let's go to Delta where our friend Juggy is on the line. Juggy, what's going on? How are you feeling tonight after a 3-1 loss against Utah?
Hey, boys. Yeah, I mean, you know, like I've always felt like it's probably going to be a pretty tough way to the finish line here, especially if you look at the Canucks schedule when we're playing, you know, the Jets twice and I think the Golden Knights twice and Dallas and then, you know, New York and New Jersey, you know, they're right in the thick of things, but you know, New Jersey historically has given us problems. So, you know, it's going to be pretty interesting to see how this all plays out. I think really what was apparent to me tonight was Utah and how poised they were even when they were down 1-0. Like it didn't seem like anything really shook them. You know, they seemed pretty connected. You could see, like, you know, the players coming in with speed, which kind of brings me to a point where I wanted to ask you guys, you know, I think Utah is probably that team that's going to get better. If you kind of look at them now too, like out of the teams that are fighting for that wild card spot, do you not feel like they would probably be the most tough out for the first round matchup that they would, you know, like Winnipeg or whoever finishes first overall is going to have to play, like out of these teams, like St. Louis, Calgary, Vancouver even? You know, I think Demko obviously changes that equation a little bit, but, you know, like I just even look at Utah and the assets they have to play with this summer. And of course, this is kind of fast forwarding to the offseason, but you know, you kind of look at where the Canucks are and how, like, you know, like Sam Bennett and Mitch Marner, like, I feel like even if they become free agents, they probably wouldn't come here. But just because, you know, the East Coast and the no tax state and all that, and Marner probably doesn't want to play in another Canadian market if he leaves Toronto, in my opinion. But if you kind of look at that, do you see, like, the Canucks being able to outcompete, you know, other teams that are going to, you know, probably look for impact guys in the off season? So yeah, those are the points I wanted to bring up, and I wanted to get your guys' thoughts and who eventually, if we do, like, who would you be okay to let go of from our prospects? But yeah, thanks guys. Thanks so much.
Hey, you got it. Anytime, Juggy. Appreciate your thoughts. And Utah is interesting because I like their team a lot, and I think he's right. They could be a tough out in the playoffs. I think you brought up Demko. I think to me that's a big thing. If you have Demko healthy,
changes the equation.
It does, right?
Yeah.
In terms of free agency, man, you and I talk about this a lot. You and I look at teams and we go through this, you know, way more than I think people would we want to really share with people, to be honest with you. But
we're looking for the hidden gem, the one that's nobody found. Right. We're like, hey, you talk here. Have you ever talked about this guy who gets 6 minutes ice time?
Have you thought about him, actually? So, I mean, we pretty much turned over every stone. And I hate to oversimplify it, but I think in free agency, it comes down to one guy. And I think you've come around on this being the guy, too, potentially. Because Juggy's right. I mean, Rantanen's not getting there. Marner, even if he does, you're probably not signing him. Bennett might not get there. So let's assume Bennett doesn't get there and Marner doesn't get there, right? It's probably Nick Ehlers.
That's it. I'm not even the biggest Nick Ehlers fan. Like, solid top six player. Don't get me wrong. But I think, like, some of the hype is almost too much for a guy who, like, I don't think he's clipped 70 points in a season. He's got 57 this year, so this is his best chance. But when you're just looking at plug-and-play guys and what this team desperately needs, this team needs speed, and if you're looking for someone to play with Elias Pettersson on top of this too, by his own admission, multiple times throughout his career, like Pettersson has talked about, I'm pass first. Mentioned it here this past week as well. And yes, he can score 40 goals, but if he's telling you he's pass first, we should all probably be listening to say, hey, we need someone that shoot first with him. And Jake DeBrusk can do that, but you need someone more. And Nick Ehlers, regularly puts up 450 shot attempts throughout the course of a season. Are they always the highest quality? We can have that conversation, but at least it's someone that is willing to shoot the puck, and this season has been doing it somewhat too. So of the options that are available to you, he stands out to me far more, given what these this team's two biggest needs are. Just some speed in the top six and some offensive firepower. And at least, like, you know you're getting a baseline of offense from Nick Ehlers.
Yeah, and he's on a very, very short list of players as far as those that could make an impact. Like, he's a higher level than DeBrusk.
Yes.
But he's still not a Gensel type, right? He's still not, you know, the Marner elite type, but he would be a step up on what a guy like DeBrusk would be. And he's kind of in this, you know, coming into free agency, him and Besser would probably be in the same type of class. But now with how Besser is gone, and listen, sometimes...
But in general, like, we've had this conversation with Besser versus Ehlers, who gets paid more. The production favors Besser.
Yes. The trades favor Ehlers.
Ehlers. Yeah. And how's that going to play out in free agency? I suspect... Again, what have you done for me lately? You know, Ehlers is having a good season on a first-place team. Besser's fading on a team that's struggling to score, and what responsibility does he have with that? So, certainly trending as if Ehlers will get the big money deal that maybe Besser wants.
Yeah.
So, hey, like, you go to free agency, see what happens. But, yeah, you're going to have to back up some money to bring him in.
Yeah, well, River District Drew says, no more Euros. I want Sam Bennett. Hey, we both like Sam Bennett. I'm skeptical that he's even going to get to free agency. That's where I'm at with Sam Bennett. And, you know, outside of free agency, it's going to have to be via trade because there aren't a ton of free agents. So if you're not even on these types of guys, it's going to have to be via trade. And that's even more difficult to narrow down because it comes down to who's going to be available come this offseason. And what would you be willing to part with, Bic? I mean, honestly, when it comes to the right trade, I'll part with anything as long as, you know, the trade is right for it. I would be reluctant to move. The only two guys I don't want to move is Vilander and Lekromäki. Lekromäki, maybe I move in the right trade. Like, I'd rather not move those guys.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody else, like... You know, I'm listening. I know people don't want to see DPD go, and I don't want to trade him. But I'm saying, like, you have to listen. You have to, if you want an impact player, you're going to have to move something you're not happy moving. That's just the way it is. You're not going to find a high level player without trading something of value.
I told you a couple of shows ago. Hedl Kudryavtsev in a second. That's the one that's going to pick up steam, man.
We'll see.
The new Raymond Ballard in a second.
All right. Now, Viking Stat also brought up. Brock, would he regret turning down the $8 million? 8 times 5 was the offer, so that's $40 million that was offered to him. Is he going to get at least $40 million in free agency? I still say yes.
Yeah.
If he gets to market,
again, we're talking about Nick Ehlers being the only guy available.
Absolutely.
If you get to market, some teams are just going to say, like, oh, we got money left over.
So I've heard that 7x7 is going to be there for him at least. Now, maybe there's some hesitancy based on how things are gone. Maybe it's $45 million or $46 million, but it's going to be in that $40 million range.
I just think the market is so bare.
We'll see. Yes, it's true, but at the same time, teams have budgets, and teams are already kind of at their budgets, even though the cap is going up. Now you're not going to see a cap space problem. You're going to see a budget problem across the National Hockey League.
Sure, yes. But because there's no cap space problems, all you need is one team to have the budget and the cap space.
That's fair.
To say, hey, do we want to get better? And... like, what's so puzzling about the Besser thing right now is he's been rock solid consistent. Brock solid, even, you can say.
Rock solid.
Like, he's done the same thing season after season after season that, just generally speaking, it's been, you know, 0.8 points per game. It's only the last time in his contract year has this cropped up, but he's generally been fairly consistent, and that's what is so puzzling and frustrating about right now, that this, what was it, 12 games he hasn't scored?
Yeah. It's a long time.
Yeah.
Not everybody loves Ehlers. Quinn says he's injury prone. He's getting older. He's light. They need tougher players. They're already soft forward group. Love the player, just don't see the fit. So not everybody loves Ehlers. But, yeah, I mean, listen, your options, like, go through the free agent list. If you're looking to make a free agent addition, that's why the Besser thing. You can't close the door on him staying ultimately because the fits elsewhere are also imperfect. And if you have to pay a guy... Well, who are you ultimately going to pay, right? So, you know, we'll see. Free agency, to me, Bic, this year, free agency isn't going to yield you the big answers and
but
solutions.
We knew this coming into the season.
Exactly.
Right? Like the rental market did not look that encouraging.
No, and even in RFAs, we spoke about this. The Canucks don't have their own third-round pick in 2026. So they can't even make any offer sheets that include third round picks until unless they reacquire their third round pick. So really, all you're looking at is maybe offer sheets for second round pick values, which isn't going to be an impact player. Or unless you do an offer sheet that's like $12 million and you give four plus first round picks, and there isn't a guy like that in free agency anyway. So it's going to be via trade, guys. It's going to have to be via trade.
The UFAs in 2026, though, let me tell you, yeah, that's a class.
Can you talk to Quinn? We just need you to wait one more year.
let's roll the dice and say let's go into your UFA year.
Yeah.
Because just wait till you see what we got cooked up in that summer.
Well, some like Jazzy T in Coquitlam, they want to rebuild. It's time to pull the plug on the season. Dan in Calgary says, talk about a rebuild from a ground up, and that's what they want to see. So there are those who want to see that, and ultimately that's not going to be in the cards unless Quinn Hughes is in here long term. Keep your thoughts coming in. We'll get to more of them on a text inbox. We'll get to IMAC, more player reaction on the Canucks Central postgame show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on Sportsnet 650.
It's Canucks Central with Dan Riccio and Satyar Shah, your destination for everything Canucks. Exclusive interviews, inside info, and even the postgame show. Listen 4 to 6 p.m. weekdays and on demand through your favorite podcast app.
This is where you talk Canucks. You're listening to the Canucks Central Postgame Show on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network.
DeBrusque into the Utah zone. Hughes drive in the middle, goes to the goal. DeBrusque tried a shot. It was blocked. And Elias Pettersson has it back left wing side. Elias Pettersson on the boards to Quinn Hughes of the line. Long wrist shot through traffic. They score! It was Hughes who got it through from the line. It might have been deflected, but the Canucks won't care. They're up 1-0 with a power play goal, 2:37 into the second.
And they're pointing at Quinn Hughes. Jake DeBrusque, that's not mine, that's yours, Quinn. But a good job by the Canucks to set up along the left-hand side. Elias Pettersson slows it down and gets the puck over to Quinn Hughes. A simple wrister through traffic. Couple of Canucks bodies there, but it looks like this went off a Utah player, the glove of Sergachev, and then past Kirill Vemelka to make this 1-0 Vancouver. That's going to be Quinn Hughes' goal and an excellent start to the second period for Vancouver.
Quinn Hughes comes through early for the Canucks, opens the scoring, and that's the only tally on the evening for Vancouver. Utah wins 3-1, and this is the Canucks Central postgame show on Sportsnet 650 and the Sportsnet Radio Network. It's Sat and Bick. Keep your thoughts coming in to our text inbox, 650-650. We'll get to those here as the show goes on. We'll hear from Canuck players, plus IMAC is going to join us. There have been lots of takes on the postgame show, and we've had a lot of varied ones, especially early on. A lot of frustration, of course, the Canucks' lack of offense, the Canucks' toughness, and a lack thereof, I should say. But what else are you seeing here on the text inbox, Bick?
650-650, TJ from Saskatchewan. Quinn playing 30 minutes tonight. T looks tired, frustrated, maybe injured. Besser looks slow. They need a big bounce back here before the road trip. This team has become a sea of bloogers. That's an unsigned text here. Nick in the Ridge, worst game of the season. I'm a Rick Tocchet guy, but wow. Utah coach absolutely took him to school tonight. Dreadful third period. Four righties on the power play. He was playing half the game. Just ridiculously bad coaching. 650-650 amongst many others here coming in tonight.
Yeah, Robbie and Burnaby, that four-minute power play was a microcosm of the entire season. Glimmers of hope, but ultimately disappointing. That's Robbie and Burnaby. All right, we'll get to more of your text here in a bit, but let's get to the Canucks captain, Quinn Hughes. He scored a goal tonight on the man advantage for Vancouver, but that's as good as it got offensively, and here he is talking about what went wrong here tonight.
Definitely have some ideas off the cusp here. Just keep that to myself, and we'll work on it. As a unit of 5 or 10 and get better.
It felt like when you guys went up 1-0, they started taking the game over a little bit. Was there any fatigue at all, given how much you guys have been playing?
No, I don't think so.
3-1 goal losses to these guys this year, Quinn. What's been the difference?
I mean, they're a good team, but I think shot ourselves in the foot with the power play and definitely had our opportunities where we could have cracked open the game.
First period. It seemed really tough to generate shots. So what was the reason behind that?
Not sure.
Given that you've had a bit of success with a couple of games here and some wins and getting back above the bar, how much does this take away from all of that?
I don't think it should take away much. I mean, obviously, we could have separated ourselves today, and I think that was something that, you know, everyone knew how big that would be. But, you know, now we're just still in the same position we've been in, which is, you know, have to, you know, do or die pretty much every day. And, yeah, it's exciting. So everyone should, you know, should be up in here and excited.
Do you keep a close eye on the standings? Is it something you try to avoid watching?
No, I mean, I think that everyone should understand where everyone's at here. I don't think anyone should be shying away from looking at that. And like I just said, it's exciting. It's a nice opportunity for us to see, you know, what type of group we are.
That is Canucks captain Quinn Hughes, and starts off by saying he has some ideas for the power play, but is going to keep them to himself. So we can't really dissect what the ideas are because he didn't want to share them. Now, Bic, what we've been starting to do here on the postgame show is selecting the three stars of the evening presented by Angry Otter Liquor. Shop Angry Otter Liquor's three stars, beer, wine, and spirits. And as far as the three stars are concerned, we'll start at number three. You heard the captain, the Canucks captain, Quinn Hughes, got the lone goal for Vancouver, played almost 30 minutes on the evening as well. So he comes in as his third star. And the second star, Bic, is?
Clayton Keller, who I thought had an awesome game. Didn't get an assist on the Logan Cooley goal, but he's the one that makes that play.
He had a goal.
Was it Schmaltz?
Yeah, he had the...
Schmaltz had an unreal play on that
right.
Logan Cooley, or on the Logan Cooley goal, where he just bodies Marcus Pedersen in the corner, and he just takes him out of the play. But Clayton Keller was very noticeable tonight as well.
And he got the empty net goal at the very end, so he did get rewarded on the evening. He is your second star of the night, and the first star is Nick Schmaltz. You mentioned him, Bic. He had a real strong game.
Yeah, man. That play he makes on the Cooley goal, just unreal. And he just had moments throughout the course of this game where he was very noticeable, able to get on the puck as well. And he's having a nice season.
Won a lot of faceoffs, too, eight of them. Eight wins, three losses, 73%. And that's also an area where the edge went to the Utah Hockey Club tonight. They won 64% of the faceoffs. For Vancouver, though, Elias Pettersson won 9, lost 8, 53%. And he was the guy who took the second most faceoffs. But Pugh Suter had a tough night. Lost 16, took 1-5 out of 24. Out of 21, and only 24% in the face-off circle. But, yeah, Nick Schmaltz, a good game from him, and those are your three stars.
He's kind of having a Dylan Strome moment, right? Strome leaves Arizona, has some tough years in Chicago, now thriving in Washington. Schmaltz, Chicago to Arizona, now in Utah, and it's taken some time here, but he's starting to really become a player. He's had some really good seasons here recently.
Yeah, he certainly has. All right, and those are your three stars of the evening. Before we go and get to the thoughts of Jake DeBrusk, who was honest here tonight. Now, we had a text earlier saying, how can you pay Brock Besser more than Jake DeBrusk? DeBrusk is making $5.5 million. Somebody else texted in and said, what does DeBrusk do? I mean, he was another waste of a signing. But, I mean, he has, 22 goals on the season so far. He's making $5.5 million. I think he's done his job, wouldn't you say, this year, based on what he's getting paid?
Yeah, 100%.
And if you look at, we'll see what the contracts are going to be here in free agency, but $5.5 million for a guy who scores 20-plus goals, gets you 40 to 50 points every year, like, that's fine. You had hope that he can become a guy who takes a step and becomes an impact forward, right, can score 30-plus and do a lot of it individually himself. He just might be that type of streaky goal scorer that gets anywhere from 20 to 30 in a season, but isn't going to drive play. But when you're getting paid $5.5 million, I'll take that any day. I have no issues with what Jake DeBrusk has brought this season.
He's got himself 11 power play goals so far this year, 23 goals on the year. It's been perfectly fine. No complaints.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think we have to live in that reality, or at least be willing to accept that, like, just because he doesn't outperform the contract doesn't mean he's not performing to the contract, and that's not a bad outcome. That's just average, and that's what you get paid for.
Yeah,
but just because it's not like, oh, 70 point big wing, big massive coup by the team, does not mean it's a bad signing.
No,
he's done his job.
Now, the one thing I wonder about, you mentioned him scoring on the power play a lot. He's played the net front, and he's had a lot of success doing that. You know who else had a lot of success doing that last year? Brock Besser.
Mm-hmm.
Both guys kind of, you know, are you getting the best out of both guys doing that? And so, I mean, Rissbinder says he would have on the power play Besser in net front, Lekromäki, DeBrusk, Pettersson, and Quinn Hughes. So DeBrusk in the bumper spot. I think DeBrusk in the bumper makes sense because he has a left-handed shot. But he hasn't shown an ability to succeed in that role, you know, and he's not as good on the retrievals. When you play bumper, you also have to be really good on retrievals and be able to dive in and do a lot of different things. He just doesn't have that game to do that dynamically. And to me, that was the big thing about him on the bumper spot. Can he figure that out and become that type of player as a left-handed shot so JT can set him up for the one-timer? But because JT's not here,
that reality does not
doesn't exist anymore anyways, right? But I'm just not sure you're getting the best out of him in the bumper. I'm not against it, sure, but this is my question about Besser again and DeBrusk long-term. And DeBrusk is signed for six more years. You feel good about the net front of the power play, but if Besser is at his best there and he's not going to produce from the wing and he's not producing from the bumper spot really, but he's more comfortable net front, like, how's it going to work here? And right now you don't know who the best center is for him anyways either, right? To me, Besser might stay here, but I have a hard time seeing with the current roster, the way it's constructed, how he's going to succeed here. That's my big question with Brock Besser.
Yeah, and especially when this team's like number one need right now is some speed in the top six.
Yeah.
You spend the money and you spend the roster spot, not just, oh, you have 50 contracts. If you give Brock Besser a contract, he's going to play in the top six. Where is the opportunity for someone to jump in to inject more speed into it? That's my concern. Like, the opportunity cost is more of the concern than the actual cost of the contract.
Yeah.
I think that, just given the way he's played, like, that's not even going to be an excessive contract anymore if he stays here in Vancouver. But how are you going to change what it looks like in the top six? Because then you're for sure going to have Pettersson, DeBrusk, Besser, and probably Hedl going into next season. So there's still two more spots, but now you're taking money away. As we talked about, like, there's probably about $14 million to play with.
Yeah.
You go with Besser, that's going to be at least $7 million. You're taking yourself out of the Ehlers conversation all of a sudden. So how is it going to look different in that top six next year? And, you know, the minutes might go to Connor Garland. Well, that's not changing the speed anymore.
Well, and that's what you're also looking at. How are you going to impact it? We see without Filip Hedl, how the Canucks did not look nearly as fast tonight either. And you want to add, in addition to Hedl being here, and we'll see how his long-term fit is. But, yeah, it's going to be the big question. Gary from North Shore was asking earlier, are they now okay with letting Besser walk as a free agent? I think they were okay with it along.
I think given the actions from last summer to now, that's clearly like been part of the equation.
Well, I mean, we asked Alvin when he was on Canucks Central, yeah, are you okay with letting him walk? And he said, yeah, you have to be in this situation. So we'll see what happens with Besser ultimately. Still a lot of games left in the season. Can he still find a hot streak and turn the tide? We're certainly hoping for that. We mentioned Jake DeBrusk, and he did meet with the media postgame. He got an assist tonight, him and Elias Pettersson getting the helpers on Quinn Hughes' lone goal for the Canucks. And here he is meeting with the media about what happened tonight.
Yeah, obviously there wasn't a lot going offensively. You know, it's one of those things where, you know, the legs and you don't have the oomph that you, I guess, normally have. You need to rely on your details and things that, you know, are preached. And we just didn't do a good enough job tonight, honestly. You know, I thought that Utah obviously plays a lot of speed through the neutral zone, and that's where they generate their offense. And I thought for the most part we were pretty decent there. But, you know, I think that we just didn't really force. I mean, you know, we tried. I'm not saying that, but just didn't force it enough, obviously, and came up short.
Disappointed that you couldn't create more quality looks with all the power play time you had in the third?
Yeah, I mean, that 4-minute power play pretty much, you know, there's lots of time left. But I guess looking as fresh as now, it's we got to bear down on that. That's on all the guys that are on the ice, and I'm included, obviously, and, you know, that's unacceptable.
You had a couple of results here that have gone positively. How frustrating is it to not be able to build on that, maybe separate?
Yeah, I mean, obviously that's what you look at. You know, you look at the standings obviously before the game, and you know, it was a tight turnaround, but obviously trying to distance ourselves from teams, you know, it seems like it's pretty compact, obviously. So to not be able to do that, you know, we got a lead, and kind of in that fashion, obviously stings, but you move forward, you know, you have to. That's what playoff mentality is all about, is try to stay even keel even when you know, you can kind of tell a game script isn't really going your way, and just try to stay focused on the next shift and things like that.
Given the schedule you guys have had, was fatigue a factor? It seemed like once you got up one, they might have taken the game over a little bit.
Yeah, but every team deals with that. I mean, I feel like that's an easy excuse in some territory. We knew we had to play a certain way, obviously. But in saying that, I think I said it a little earlier, when things aren't really going the way that you want it to go, you know, personally, or a team, or just feels a little out of sync, you got to rely on your details and things that, inside the system, that will give you opportunities even when you're not necessarily at your A game.
That is Jake DeBrusk after a 3-1 loss against the Utah Hockey Club. And we now turn to the closer. The triple threat has come in to put this one to bed. You watch him on TV, read him on digital, about to hear him on radio. He is Ian McIntyre.
Wouldn't spring training be great right about now?
Yeah. So the first 2 years of Sports at 650's existence, I got to cover spring training. I got to go to Tampa Bay for a
was
week.
It 2 years?
It was the first 2 years of 650. Okay. It was nice.
Are the Jays? I thought it was Dunedin.
It was Dunedin, yeah, Tampa.
But they would go to Tampa?
Yeah, okay. I went to Tampa. Dunedin is just outside of Tampa.
Because Tampa's the Yankees, right?
Yankees as well, Phillies. They're in Clearwater, I think, the Phillies, yeah. But it's all Clearwater, Dunedin. It's all kind of outside of Tampa.
That would be a good job, baseball. First of all, the paycheck is good.
Long season. Yeah.
You do all your practicing in the spring, and that's the end of practice, right? Like, think about going to see – well, they have batting practice and fielding practice. Yeah. But really, the labor-intensive, all the practice, all the days of drudgery are in the spring in about 6 weeks.
Yeah.
And you're in the sunshine, and you're just
some nice drudgery there.
Yeah, it is. You hang out. I mean, I would say like the days are long because you get there early, way before anything. Because
I know it must have been brutal for you.
No, it wasn't brutal, but I'm just saying your days are long. It's not like, you know,
the text I would get. I'm at a bar right now.
So yeah,
just a tough one.
So you'd be there from like 8 a.m. until like 6 p.m. or like 7 p.m. But then afterwards, it was great because then you just go by the water and hang out. It was great.
One of my favorite assignments ever was spring training for IndyCar. Remember when, like, people don't realize now, or unless they remember it because they're old like you are, how big IndyCar was. Like, the number of superstar drivers were in that series. And, of course, Vancouver had a race. And I think our excursion may have been supplemented by Molson's Breweries. Anyways, because they, of course, had the race here. Mm-hmm. But a bunch of Vancouver reporters went to Homestead, Florida, which is kind of ground zero for all the hurricanes, or most of the hurricanes come across. But it was beautiful when we were there. And every driver, every team was available at the track in Homestead. And for some reason, we were staying in Key Largo. In the Keys.
Oh, nice.
About a half hour drive away. So we'd drive in the morning, do our interviews, drive back to, I think it was the Holiday Inn in Key Largo, but it was on the water.
Yeah.
And then I would sit on the veranda and write my story while looking out at the Atlantic.
That's amazing.
And just water.
And I may have had a tropical drink.
As you should. It'd be a crime.
My life has been pretty good.
It's
not as good as yours, Sat, but pretty good.
Yes, you know.
Why'd you bring up spring training? Just because?
The closer. Made me think of the Expos.
Expo. You know what? Let's veer back to the Vancouver Canucks tonight. I know we could probably use a distraction because, you know, off air I was turning to Bick. I'm like, not a lot happened tonight. You know,
it was a very low
event hockey game, and one, the Canucks come out on the wrong end of it. Now, we can look at this and say, if it wasn't such a tough race and the Canucks didn't have such a tough year, it's their fourth game in six nights, two back-to-backs. Of course, fatigue's going to play a factor. Schedule did them no favors. You move on into the next one. But in the standings, this game meant a lot. And instead of having potentially a six-point gap with Utah, now they're only two back. So the playoff race continues to be tight.
Well, interestingly, at least I hope it is, because I'm putting it in my story, which as yet is unfinished. The difference in the standings between the Canucks and Utah over the last 6 weeks are these two games between them. Utah's got four more points than Vancouver does over that time, and it's because of these two games. You reverse those two games, Vancouver's 10 ahead, but now Utah's two behind. So, I mean, obviously the Canucks will be
doing everything they can to make sure that these 4 points, these two games, aren't what separates them from a playoff spot, with Utah being ahead of them at the end of the year. But it was an opportunity lost. And you're correct in what you said about the schedule and fatigue. And you could see, you know, the Canucks, I mean, they were happy to play that low event game. It wasn't entirely that they were being stifled. Although Utah's a far, they're sneaky good. They're far better than I think most people realize. And certainly they're better than I thought before they played these two games against Vancouver. Because my impression of them from afar is a team that's trying to build up, and obviously new market, and there's some excitement there. But really, the identity of the team are these highly skilled, really fast, offensively inclined forwards. Mm. But they actually play a really solid team game. They've completely rebuilt their defense with the guys that they've brought in. And they're just, they're a hard out. Like, they're not easy to play.
And Vimalka's good, too.
And he is. Good goaltending. All that said, the opportunity arose.
Yeah.
At, I think it was 10:43 or 10, whatever it was, halfway through the third period. Mm-hmm. That was obviously an accidental high stick by Keller on Besser, but it's still a high stick. Besser got called for that very same thing. I think it was in Philadelphia early in the season where he got tripped. And as he was falling while being tripped, his stick clipped the guy and he got a high sticking penalty. The trip wasn't called. So that is a penalty. So all those factors you talked about, they're real. And yet here it is. Here's 4 minutes to make sure you get something from this game that you led 1-0. And the power play, I mean, talk it said, that was the game. Yeah. That was the story. And, you know, for guys who have been so good these last, well, Quinn Hughes has been good forever, but Pedersen's been so good these last 10 days, 12 days or so. And Connor Garland's been really good at times for this team while playing hurt. But they just got stuck.
Yeah.
They got stuck at the top of the umbrella. Utah was ultra aggressive, basically playing the three guys at the top, and it was always Pedersen and Hughes, and sometimes it was Garland, and sometimes it was Besser when they interchanged. But the three Canucks just got stuck with the puck up high. They couldn't create anything to take advantage of that aggressiveness and move the puck down low. I mean, I'm not great at arithmetic. Well, as you guys know, I am great at arithmetic.
You're good at it.
But it's not that complicated. If they're playing you 3v3 at the top, that means you've got 2v1 down low, but you have to attack, you have to commit to doing that, and they didn't. They just got stuck. I don't know how other to put it. They got stuck on the outside. They had a couple of shots from distance. I think there was one, if I'm recalling correctly, I think there was one chance for Connor Garland at the top of the crease. It was set up by Jake DeBrusk.
Yep.
On a low to high pass, and otherwise it was like a couple of hopeful shots from the distance from Roenick and Hughes, and not much else.
There was that chance for Pedersen on the rebound where he almost tapped it in by the net. That's the only other chance, but it wasn't like this set up chance. It was off the rush, and that's pretty much as close as they got to it.
Yeah, I mean, talks all the time about moments, right? Yeah. And he talked about it on Saturday, and we talked about it. The moments that the team had, or maybe it was the Calgary game that we're talking about, these moments. They had things a little easier against Chicago. But, you know, they needed a moment from somebody, and they didn't get it. And, you know, again, credit to Utah. They didn't generate much more than Vancouver did, but they were the better team today. But, you know, they generated a goal when they needed it, and it was a bit of a lucky bounce on the winning goal, you know, a shot into traffic that bounces directly to Cooley, right? Cooley scored the second.
Yep.
It was a bounce, but the Canucks got their break too. They got their break when they hadn't been generating much at all at 5-on-5, when suddenly they had this 4-minute advantage.
Between last week, they played Calgary in this, you know, must-win situation. Tonight was a must-win, but it was, can you take advantage? And then I'm looking ahead here. I know beyond just the Winnipeg game, but they have St. Louis, another one of these teams that's kind of in this chase. And I didn't know that stat about the 4 points and all that with Utah. But now you look at the St. Louis game, and, like, that's suddenly going to matter. And how are they going to play in these moments? And it's been tight. Like, the Calgary game was tight. Tonight was tight. And I don't just mean, like, oh, the classic, like, oh, it playoff and tough. Like, they feel like they're playing tight themselves and
right.
echoed by that power play, too.
Well, that's why I said last night that they really needed the weekend sweep.
Yeah.
Because if you win the two games, not that you would ever say, okay, we've won these two, now we can relax. But there isn't this desperate, critical, terrifying pressure now
yeah.
with Winnipeg coming in. And they're the best team in the NHL and have been all season. And now, oh my God, if they don't beat Winnipeg, now they go on this road trip and they're playing from a position of weakness. And they're probably, if they don't beat Winnipeg, playing from a position where they're not in a playoff spot. Mm-hmm. Everything just becomes more desperate, tighter, harder.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's hard to play a playoff series that way, and I'm not comparing the intensity now to playoffs because playoffs are a whole other
yeah.
level. Like, people can say, well, these are playoff games, but they're not. But in terms of kind of that internal pressure that players put on themselves, these are like playoff games, and it's hard to do that for 16 or 18
yeah.
games when every night is desperate. And again, I'm not saying that, you know, mission accomplished, if they just win these two games, everything's going to
yeah.
be okay. But it just makes it easier on them going into another incredibly important week next week where they get, you know, Winnipeg, and then they start a challenging road trip in St. Louis and then go into New York, where right now you never know what you're going to get
yeah.
with those teams. They're all capable, especially the Rangers and Devils, of being very good, but they've, you know, had their own issues as well. So it would have just set things up to be a lot easier now than they're going to be had they been able to win both these games this weekend.
Well, and there are some tough games coming up. I mean, they have some non-playoff teams as well. Tonight was a non-playoff team that lost against them. They're going to have to beat some tough teams, and I'm not saying you have to beat Winnipeg, but, you know, you're going to have to beat one of these good teams at
yeah,
some point.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to get in the playoffs if they only beat teams below them
yeah.
in the standings.
Well, especially after tonight.
And by the way, they haven't been doing that.
Yeah. Not
right, they lost
lately.
To Seattle
yeah.
Last road trip, lost to Anaheim, lost twice to Utah. So somewhere they're going to have to beat some good teams. And
lost to Montreal.
Lost. Thank you, another one,
yeah.
Montreal. So you're going to have to make up for it in other places. And right now, with the way their offense is and Hedl being hurt, and by the way, I thought that was really interesting what Sherwood,
yeah.
how plain-spoken he was about
we'll get him
yeah,
next
Jason
year.
Dickinson. You got to be careful.
Yeah.
I remember Todd Bertuzzi saying that about Steve Moore. So
Brad May saying the bounty on his head.
Yes.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah, that was me. He told that to,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah.
So. I made him famous for it. Brad May sometimes reminds me of that as well.
Well, it's like
why did you talk to me that night? You know, they're.
And I think, and honestly, he probably said more.
Yeah.
And you guys went with the PG version. Of what
yeah,
he said.
Probably. But it was interesting what Sherwood said. But this
yeah.
is like a real factor now for Vancouver with his struggling offense, that they don't have Hedl to back up the other team.
Yeah,
in the neutral zone. This is a bigger loss. You know, as DeBrusk said, you know, everyone likes to look at numbers, and when we look mm-hmm. at Hedl's numbers, as we all know, he wasn't accomplishing anything offensively since the Four Nations.
Yeah.
But he's still a guy who drove back the other team's
yes.
defense and allowed you to get the puck up ice and into the other team's zone. So he's going to be missed, and it's just, you know, more pressure in this. Kind of constant crisis about where is this team going to generate enough goals to win.
Yeah, and that's going to be something we hopefully don't talk about on Tuesday, but might be talking about on Tuesday when the Canucks take on the Winnipeg Jets. Ian, thanks for your time. I know you got to run over and finish your stuff, so do that, and we all look forward to reading it when it goes up on Sportsnet.
Can I steal this pulled pork sandwich?
Yes, please,
that you guys
take
left
it.
Out? I think you made a bet. I think you guys...
No, we already
someone
have
has said,
one.
Hey, let's put this out and see what McIntyre's reaction is.
He's on to us. He's on to us and the show.
I already ate. Bic already ate. Lena already ate. So this is an extra one.
It was fair. Really.
Yeah, so take it with you.
I'll get it all over my laptop. Yes. It'll be a mess.
It'll be fantastic. Kind of,
much like my story is at the moment, but I'll get it cleaned
You'll
up.
You'll get it together, yeah. And you have some sustenance to help you out do that. We look forward to reading it on sportsnet.ca. Thanks to Bic Nizar. He's filling in for me tomorrow on Canucks Central alongside Reach. Thanks, Bic. Thanks to Lena. Thanks to Eddie and all of you for listening and participating. Always appreciate it. This has been the Canucks Central Postgame Show presented by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment on the home of your Canucks, Sportsnet 650.